And the pitch.
We deliver baseball caps, mitts, and everything you need for the game. But what you really get is so much more.
FedEx delivery.
Game day spirit. What we deliver by delivering.
Class is in session.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Tony Spears, and we are going to learn a little something about video. So this week, I am
Chris
and Kurt,
and we're going to be talking a little bit about early access woes, just pre-order culture in general, honestly, because this past E3, I think, has really opened my eyes to just how much pre-order culture has kind of just become the norm, and it bothers me. And I have a little bit to share on that, but I want us to start out with early access, if you guys are...
Sure.
So, I know Chris has explained in the past that his feelings in early access, but I think we can honestly say I've seen too many broken games come out of, and I know you guys play a lot more as far as, like, you know, diving into different stuff on, but for every one or two great early access game that you run into, stuff like PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and stuff like that, you get 100 just garbage games that don't get finished, and these guys are still making money, and that does bother me quite a bit.
I'm in the same boat as you on that. There are too many games that shouldn't be released as a product until they are to a point where they should be playable in their own right. You shouldn't have to play a game and think, oh, it's early access, it's coming out, all this will get fixed, I'm going to enjoy it while it's still broken. That's like going to T-ball practice and using a golf club. It's like, yeah, you could probably make it work, but you're just limiting yourself. Go spend your time doing something more productive.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because there, I don't know, it's, I get why they do it. It's for people that don't have money to finish the game. That's what they're trying to achieve, is they're trying to finish their game on the backs of other people playing an unfinished version of their game. The problem with that is most of the time people don't finish the game. They don't care, or they just get money and then they're done, or they get money and they do small updates here and there, have a small team of people doing nothing to the game just to push it along. And then you have situations like Ark, where they make so much money in early access that it's still in beta form and they're already putting out expansions because they've made so much money. Instead of finishing the game itself, they make another game that people can pay money for.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing can be said for Subnautica, right? Subnautica is still technically a early access.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, why... See, the fact that... I didn't know Ark was coming out with expansions data. That's mind-blowing to me. Like, you should have to finish your game, like, the first game, before you can go through and say you're going to make an expansion or, like, you know, like a whole separate part of the original game. It doesn't make any sense. Like, but there are a lot of other ways to do this, to get this funding, and a lot of other ways that they can get the money they need in order to, you know, to finish out a game. I don't understand why they have enough to start a game but not enough to finish it, or if just taking the beta moniker off of it doesn't, like, you know, like does that not serve them? Like, does it actually hurt their sales or hurt the appeal of their game to say this is the finished product?
If you say, we've got all these bugs and stuff here, this is going to be a problem, we need this fixed. But if you're like, oh no, our game is still in beta, okay, well, we've still got all these bugs we're working out. I mean, just taking the moniker off of it just simply changes that. The game still has its parts where it's near unplayable.
See, that's, I don't know, that, like,
which it's a cop-out. Like, that game should be removed then. If they want to make it so it's in beta, but then they make an expansion for it so you can pay another $25 to them and it's still in early access. You can look at Ark if you want right now. It's still considered early access, air quotes, mm-hmm. right? And two lines below that, you can buy the expansion to it. Like, what? Why is there DLC/expansions to a game that's still in early access? They need to finish the game or get removed from Steam. I think that's what needs to happen. But they're not going to do it because Steam makes too much money off of it. But now, and then people keep going on and on about it, and you can never say anything bad about the game because they'll just say that it's in beta or early access. You can see, I think as soon as you pay for the game, that game is completed game. Mm-hmm. It needs to run like a completed game. If it doesn't, then you shouldn't be charging.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I feel you there, but I also think that they need to have some kind of cutoff, like what you're saying. Like if they decide they want to make an expansion to the game or whatever, they need to finish the game that they started, so like the first part of Ark, or that game, if they want to keep it in beta, needs to be removed until it can be released as a finished product. Like there's no reason to just keep something, like to have this little tag on it so your game can be broken in spots and be like, oh well, you know, it's just, you know, it's an early access game, so it's going to be like that. Like no one wants that. No one wants that excuse, because that's what drives people away from early access.
I almost wonder if part of it is the dedication and the drive that these actual game studios have developed. Like you look at Blizzard, Activision, EA, they don't release early access games like this. If they do, their early access is like a week or two before the game. And then, yes, they deal with a couple bugs being out here and there. And then they can put out all the DLC they want. I completely forgot where I was going with this.
lost a ticket to the train?
Well, I mean, if it's like Blizzard, they'll release like a closed beta and then an open beta and then release the game for purchase.
Yeah, that's what they do with Overwatch.
Normally, you don't buy the game until it's live.
Yeah.
When it comes to Blizzard games, you didn't buy Overwatch until the game came out.
Yeah. And a lot of people had access to like the open beta or the closed beta, but the good thing about that was those people got to play and they got, you know, they got their hands on the rough, untested part of the game, and they helped to iron out and refine it, but all their progress was lost once launch day came around and everybody had a clean slate. And that's the way that it needs to be. Like, everybody needs to start on the same footing.
Yeah, my thing is they need to move the pay. The pay should... When you pay for the game, it shouldn't be in early access or beta.
Yeah, I agree.
It shouldn't be. The game should be a live game that can be criticized. Well, I mean, that's how Blizzard does it.
Yeah.
Is you can criticize the beta all you want, but then it's in beta and you haven't paid money for it. Whereas when it's released... When Overwatch fully came out, you know, people got their accounts wiped. That's fine because it's beta to live. But then you actually had to buy the game because you could play that game in beta without ever having to bought the game. And then once the game came out, you had to purchase it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Steam Early Access, you can pay you pay for the game and then they finish the beta whenever the hell they feel like finishing the beta. Or never, when it comes to, like, Rust, which has been in early access for, like, 8 years.
Yeah, see, the thing that gets me is, like, games like Minecraft, for example, right? Minecraft was in beta for, like, 5 years or something like that. I think it might have been longer. I'm not 100%. But then all of a sudden, like, one day without announcement, it was 1.0. And some people didn't even notice. Because at that point, the early portion, you know, the beta portion of that game had been so, like... just gone through the ringer and modded by different people in the community that it, you know, it didn't really matter to a lot of people that it had hit 1.0, but that's because there was constantly things being done to Minecraft and ways to fix it and like notching the people that like purposely going through and fixing it. And so once it was done and it hit the 1.0, it was like, okay, here it is. Like, leave us alone. It's as good as it's going to get, that type thing. But like you're saying, games like Rust, where that game is just, like, I know for a fact that game is broken in a lot of places, and it's just, it's rough and janky. And so, that some of that stuff may never, ever get ironed out, but they're still going to sell it. They're still going to keep it on the Steam store in the early access page from here to infinity if they can get away with it.
And this brings me back to my point of what I was trying to think of before. It's all about people who aren't, I'm going to call them true game developers. They develop a game and give out what they can so they can make money. Because they feel like it might be an easy group of people to exploit with the early access moniker. When compared to, you've got these big companies that will actually release a game and it's ready to go they will fix all of this stuff. And then you've got all these companies that are releasing these shit titles that are not done, and they have no plans to ever fix them because they did what they wanted. They got people to pay them. Okay, we're golden. We made our cash cow. We're going to move on.
Yeah, and it's sad too that, I mean, that is the truth with a lot of games. Now, you can't exactly say that, like, the big AAA devs aren't guilty of doing that to a certain extent. Some games do have, like, the open betas that, like, you have to pay into, and I don't think that's cool. Like, Chris, you were telling me that Destiny 2 is going to have a paid beta, right?
Yeah, Destiny 2 is going to have a paid beta. Yeah.
And that's
paid. It's considered a closed beta, not an open, but
yeah,
it's a closed beta that it starts for console July 18th. That game doesn't even come out until September, I want to say.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what, two and a half months of open beta or closed beta?
No, actually, the release date isn't until October 20th.
I think that's for PC. Consoles is like a month before. Okay. But either way, I'm criticizing it because I don't like that, first of all. However, I'm not 100% aware. I'm not sure if that closed beta is going to run all the way until the game comes out. It could just be a week here and then cut off the closed beta, and then a week let down the road and then cut off the closed beta, which a lot of AAA game developers do that, where they'll do like a closed beta for a week and then move on. Like Lawbreakers is currently doing that as well.
Yeah. And by the way, Chris, the
Necromancer expansion did that too, where it'd be live for 4 or 5 days and then it'd be offline for 4 or 5 days.
And Chris, by the way, just to confirm, you're right. For consoles, it comes out September.
Okay, cool.
And PC so
it's a little
October.
Less than 2 months then.
Yeah.
Question for you though. Is the beta for Destiny, do you pay only for the beta, or is that included when you buy the game? You get
no,
that beta
it's
access.
It's a pre-release access. It's a pre-purchase access.
But see, that's still kind of muddy too, because like you go through and see this brings us around to the whole pre-ordering. So many people are going to hop on this because they want to get in early, but a lot of them, well, one, you would hope that the stuff that they're going to get isn't going to carry over. Like the good money says that it's not going to carry over.
Oh, it almost never does.
Yeah.
Most people are pretty good about that. You do that once and you'll get blackballed from the community forever.
Yeah.
So most people will not do that, especially Bungie is not going to do that. And Blizzard doesn't do that.
But so the thing that I'm concerned about with like a lot of stuff coming out of E3 is like, there's the standard editions of games that you can get your hands on. In the instance of Destiny, like you can pay into the beta, but there's no real telling how long that beta is going to go on. Like you may pay the $60 and then, you know, with the intention of getting into the beta so you can get your hands on it. And then it may run for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden it's shut off and it's like, okay, well wait till September, wait till October. And then you're still out $60. Like what if you don't end up liking what you see in the beta? I mean, granted, yes, there will be changes made, obviously, but like, what if you just don't like the base game, like the core game behind Destiny, and now all of a sudden you're out? I just kind of it seems like you're not doing a good service.
Well, you shouldn't do it then. You shouldn't do it in the first place if you're not 100% sure that you're gonna like it.
Yeah,
you really shouldn't. Like, people have talked about it all over the internet. You shouldn't be pre-ordering games. Like, really, when you think about it. Like,
I want to counteract you on this for a second and say you shouldn't pre-purchase games. I feel like pre-ordering is very good for the community.
Well, pre-ordering doesn't really happen anymore.
No, it's
like, style. You're talking about like the style where you put money down, and if you don't pick it up, then you can get the money back. Kind of.
There's not even, well, like at Target where I work, our pre-order system is you pick up a $1 card, and it says, "I want to pick up a copy of this game from you." That card will have your beta access codes and whatnot on it. And when you bring the card back to us, we give you a $5 gift card for purchasing that game through us at Target.
Yeah, I get you. And GameStop does the same thing, same similar thing.
Yeah.
And I get you. I understand that. And I agree with that kind of situation. But when I think of pre-ordering, I think of like pre-purchasing now. And I think that's because of the way that it's labeled on the internet. I'm pretty sure it's called pre-ordering when you buy a game online.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of because they ask you how much you want to put down in a lot of instances, and a lot of people just pay the whole thing. Like, that's the thing, is a lot of consumers aren't doing the homework. And I mean, it's kind of on them because they're not, but at the same time, like, you should just be able to trust the people that you're purchasing these goods off of with the intention of, like, hey, I want a good product or whatever. But a lot of the time when people go through and pre-order stuff, like, I know the way it was with my, at my work with Destiny, so many people at my work just went and just bought it outright like a month before. And granted, they all did it digitally. So when they did their digital pre-purchase, it was just waiting on the dashboard, you know, like the day, you know, when they got home that day from work, and then poof, there it is. And who wouldn't love that, right? I mean, there's a lot of appeal to that. But at the same time, like, I know half of those guys didn't follow through to even like the first expansion to Destiny. They were like, this game is kind of bunk, and Destiny was pretty. So I mean, I agree with you, Chris, that like, you shouldn't be pre-purchasing at all. I made that mistake with No Man's Sky. And I think you did too. Didn't you pre-purchase No Man's Sky along with me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we both had our hopes up of how awesome this game was going to be because of everything we'd been seeing in all the marketing and the commercials and, you know, all of the different like gameplay previews that we had seen, various outlets and stuff like that. Like, No Man's Sky was looking legit. Hello Games sold us a bill of goods, and it was not the thing that they had promised. So that's not unique just to No Man's Sky. Granted, that is one of the more, I guess, notable or memorable ones in recent memory, but
egregious is the word you want.
Yeah. Egregious is definitely the phrase there, but it's not unique. That is not a one in a million thing. That happens a lot. And I think that people get so tied into the convenience of pre-purchasing as soon as they see something that they're into. Like, I guarantee, like, so, like, one of the games I've been talking about from E3 a lot is Anthem, right? Anthem looks really cool. Don't get me wrong. It looks like Halo and Destiny had a baby, and they put them in mech suit. Should appeal to me, but I'm a wary purchaser now. So Anthem is going to get a lot of traction, and it's going to get a lot of hype toward the end of its dev cycle with a bunch of marketing. And then people are going to, as soon as someone sees a commercial that says, you know, pre-order now and get X, Y, and Z cool thing, like, they're going to go out and they're going to go and they're going to pre-order it. And that game could end up being total trash. There's no way of knowing.
I'm a huge anti-hero to pre-order bonuses. I am very much against them.
I agree as well.
Yeah.
Although I do them, like, that I'm against them. However, I will and have done them in the past. And I mean, just because I've done them doesn't mean that I agree, but I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I do it, but it's to the point where, like, if I don't do it, then I feel like I've failed. Whereas it shouldn't be that way in the first place.
Yeah. It's classic FOMO, fear of missing out. Like, you see,
I feel like pre-order bonuses aren't the worst thing, but there should be a difference between, like, pre-order bonuses that affect gameplay, which should not exist, or ones that are just, like, cosmetic stuff. Like, if you pre-ordered Overwatch, you got the Origins Edition skins.
Yeah.
For the same price as the regular game.
Yeah. Well, like, the standard, like, I bought the standard edition of the game, so I didn't get, like, the special, you know, the special edition ones, the Founders, it's called. But, like you said, there's no gameplay perk there to me having those skins. Granted, half of the reason why I was playing Destiny so much is because particular skins, because they look super dope.
Overwatch, not Destiny.
Oh yeah, Overwatch, sorry. The main reason I was sticking with Overwatch a lot is because I was trying to get some of those skins were pretty dope. But it had no effect on play. It's like you guys said, like, there's no gameplay like payout, just in the same way a lot of like that. So that's cool if it's like aesthetic stuff, but I still don't think, like, the Assassin's Creed Origins, the God's Collector's Edition, it's $120, and it's a bunch of just useless crap. Like, it has an in-game map and an art book and a statue and crap like that. I don't need all that crap, but someone's gonna go out there and pay all that money.
Maybe you do, though. Maybe you do. Like, what if you had a thing in your living room, which I may have in the near future, within the next year, that holds all of that random garbage? that you want to display and show off the fact that you spend a lot of money on video games.
Okay, well, oh God. Oh, it's funny because
people actually collect that kind of stuff.
No, yeah, I mean totally.
See, but that's why there's collector's editions.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like there's nothing wrong with that, but in that same bundle there is a special, hold on, I'm going to bring it up right now so I can list off everything. I have it right
here. Diablo Soulstone flash drive.
But I get what you're saying. You're saying it's a collector's edition. There should be collector's editions.
Yeah.
You don't agree with when you pre-purchase it, you get something special.
Yeah, so it comes
with... that no one else gets.
Exactly.
Or they won't feel like there should be a collector's edition that gives you bonuses in-game.
Yeah, which is
the Pip-Boy wasn't a
which is what this one does.
Either, but...
Okay, so the Gods Collector's Edition comes with a map, the deluxe edition of the game, a 10.2-inch figurine, the soundtrack, and an art book. Okay, that's pretty cool. That's all really cool collector stuff if that's what you're into. But then it also comes with a pre-order mission, a special naval mission, and an entire, it's called the Desert Cobra Pack, which it looks like it's a bunch of like equipment and looks like a horse. Yeah, it's definitely a horse, but yeah. So if it wasn't for the fact that it came with that stuff, then yeah, I can see where, you know, like you're justified in purchasing this stuff because why not? You know, if you want some cool game swag, get some cool game swag. But the fact that there's like content to the game that other people aren't going to get just because they didn't want to shell out an extra $80, like, come on, man, that's not cool. That doesn't do a service to the rest of your community. Not to mention the fact that if people do want to get that stuff later on, they're probably gonna have to pay for like that, you know, in some way or form for that content, you know, additionally.
Yeah,
that's the stuff I don't like.
Yeah, and it's kind of upsetting with when it comes to like collector's editions, right? You have to pre-purchase to buy pretty much any of the collector's editions for any game that's popular.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously you can buy a collector's edition for a game no one plays, whatever that game may be. But if you want to buy the collector's edition for Destiny 2, well, good fucking luck because they're already sold out.
Yeah.
The game's not even out. And the game won't be out until September or October. Months. Yeah, until September or October, depending on the console you're trying to play it on, PC or console. And that is already sold out. So those things push the pre-sales also,
mm-hmm.
because people will buy them as soon as they launch. It was like a $200 thing with the backpack and everything. It was like a $200 thing, and it was sold out in like the first 3 weeks. So, I mean, good luck.
Yeah. But then, okay, so then on the inverse of this, and this is something that I wanted to bring up, is Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, right? So they announced during the Nintendo portion of E3 what the two DLC packs were. And a lot of people were really upset that a Legend of Zelda game was going to have DLC, which I don't care one way or the other. Like, I think it's cool. There's going to be more game to play there. It's actually like adding like a new like piece of story to the game. So that's cool. The thing I don't like is the fact that you can't get the DLCs separately. You have to buy them as a bundle. So, like, there's DLC Pack 1 and DLC Pack 2. In order to get 2, you have to purchase 1. Like, you can't do a la carte. You have to buy the whole bundle. And stuff like that really, really irritates me, where they force you into this whole, like, oh, get this season pass, and you'll get this, this, and this, and this, and this. Or you pay $30 extra if you just buy all these expansions piecemeal. And it's like, well, of course, I'm going to pay the $60 for the season pass because I don't want to pay an extra $30 bucks in the long haul. But damn you, EA, for making me buy the season pass.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I really wish they would stop doing that, but it happens.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to do it because it makes them money.
And I've been playing GTA 5 recently.
Yeah.
And, no, I mean, they have blundered. Currently, there's a current blunder going on when it comes to the modding. However, they haven't charged for any of the DLC that they've created on GTA Online, which is almost unheard of in this day and age.
Yeah. But if you notice, you can buy money in that game, and the stuff in that game is absurdly expensive, like as far as the in-game cash is concerned. So that's how Rockstar is making their money. Not to mention on just, you know, like units sold, period. Like that game
is... I mean, but...
But a lot of those games have both of those things.
Yeah.
They have where you have to buy the DLC, and then you have to buy money.
Yeah.
Also.
I mean, you're not wrong, but, like, it's not... And I know you're not trying to do this, but, like, it would appear to a lot of people that it's like, oh man, it's, you know, it's a good guy Rockstar. Like, they don't, you know, they're not charging us for DLC, even though, like, you could go out and you could buy $1 million in the game for $15. You're gonna blow through that $1 million really quick. So then you go back for another 15 and another 15, and pretty soon you're like, oh, you know what, man, for $50 I can just get to go. Like, there's that whole thing. But no, you're right. They haven't charged for any of their DLC, and that's really good. But if there was a tree that money grew on, it would be called GTA 5. And that's probably one of the reasons why that they just weren't ever planning on doing, you know, charging for DLC anyway. I think they knew that game was going to sell like freaking hotcake.
Well, yeah, of course. And they knew it immediately as soon as they started pre-sale, dude.
Yeah.
As soon as the pre-sale started, they were like, okay, well, we have multiple millions of dollars here. Like, we have all the money we could ever want.
Yeah, we might actually be the highest grossing game of the last five.
Yeah, and they knew that as soon as pre-orders started. Pre-orders, pre-sales.
And you know what's awesome? Is the game actually got released.
Yep.
Because that's what I love about AAA companies.
Yeah. And guess
what?
People
bash on them for being too mainstream. But they commit. They say, we're going to make a game, and they either won't release it, or they release a finished product. There is no halfway, unless you're kind of Destiny 1, in which case you put out a ton of expansions and fix it.
Yeah.
And they gave a bunch of people who bought it and pre-ordered the expansion, at least the first one or two expansions, free.
Well, I mean, now, it's funny now, because if you go to a store to buy Destiny, right, and you want to play the game, you can get the, whatever the, you know, is considered like the ultimate edition of the game that has like the Taken King and everything, all the way up until Rise of Iron, all the way up until the last expansion pack in a $60 package. So it's all the raids, all the DLC, everything up to the Taken King, which is where people considered Destiny to start getting good, because they'd made so many changes to the game fundamentally that it finally became the game that everybody wanted
Taken
it to
King,
be.
Taken King was very, very good. I started playing it when the game first came out on PS4. And then I started playing on Xbox 360 when Taken King came out, and the game was considerably better. The game was very, very good at Taken King.
Yeah.
So I haven't played it since then. I haven't played Rise of Iron at all.
But even then, they don't charge a lot for it. Like, I'm looking at it right now. You can get everything from Destiny 1 through the Rise of Iron, the entire collection, for $40.
See, that's part of that is because the new game is going to be coming out soon, so they're like, well, we can just sell this. But yeah, it's funny because you can't really get a hold of vanilla Destiny anymore. You can, but it's been changed so much by everything that was implemented by the Taken King that it looks nothing like it did at launch.
Oh no, it's way different.
Yeah,
way different.
But that's,
and it's way better.
Yeah, but that is like, that's coming back to what Kurt was talking about, where these games that, you know, they might start out janked up and stuff like that, but the developers listen to their communities and they're like, okay, guys, we got to find a way to fix this somehow. And they go through and they either, you know, they put in patches, they balance things, or they, you know, in some cases just change the game from the groundwork and go through and fix it. Like, the prime example of this is, and Chris, I think you'll appreciate this, is Final Fantasy 14, right? So I recently started watching the NoClip documentary on Final Fantasy 14, which, if you're listening to this and you have not gone and watched NoClip, gone to their YouTube channel, you should. It's probably really bad. It's probably really bad for me to be sitting here like plugging somebody else's stuff, but whatever, I don't care. Danny O'Dwyer is doing God's work, because that man has shed light on a lot of really cool things about games that people love, or like facets of games that people love, that probably wouldn't get told otherwise. And so you should definitely go and check it out. It's over on YouTube. It's called NoClip. And the most recent one that he did was on Final Fantasy 14, and about how if it wasn't for Square Enix doing a very un-Japanese game developer type thing, that game would not have survived its initial launch, let alone be where it is now with just having launched their new expansion.
And I love that they wrote, like, because all this stuff happened in the real world, they wrote a lore that kind of worked with that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that they talk about in the documentary, is the fact that, like, typically they would have stuck with this game and just tried to patch it and try to, you know, bring about some type of change that was going to placate the audience and keep their user base around as much as possible until they could make a significant change. But they realized that things were so bad when the game launched, as far as, you know, what was wrong with it, as opposed to the number of people sticking around, that they're like, something drastic has to happen. And so they essentially pulled a Cataclysm and were like, no, we're going to have something in lore that is going to reset the world. We relaunch this game as A Realm Reborn. It's going to be completely different, and it's going to run better, and people are going to like it better. And they did, and it worked. And you kind of have to tip your hat to them for that, because they could have tried to stick to their guns and just bite the bullet, and that thing would have gone down. But they didn't. They decided just to swallow their pride and remake the game, which, like I said, is a very non-Japanese developer type thing to do.
I think it's more of an MMO type thing to do, though, because keeping MMO servers online is heavy maintenance. And if you're reworking something from the ground up, getting those servers to work with that as well, it's going to be a lot of work. Like, one that I know didn't actually go offline, but did something very similar, was a complete rework, is Diablo 3. That game at vanilla was so much different than it is now. Like, it's unheard of. You were lucky to get one legendary a week. Now, you're probably going to find a legendary within the first hour of creating a brand new character. Just one example.
Yeah. And that's awesome. And that's the way it should be, is there should be that evolution along these games. But I think you guys will agree with me, because we've all played it almost to nauseam now, is PlayerUnknown's Battleground is kind of the exception to the rule when it comes to the early access thing we were talking about, where, like, that game's not a perfect ironed out, you know, product even now, but it's definitely gotten better even in the short time it's been around since launch. And obviously the guy that made it is very serious about bringing it to more of the mainstream, you know, like getting it out there on consoles and stuff like that, which a lot of people are really excited about. And I think that's good. That's definitely a developer in early access listening to his community and being like, okay, I'm going to make this.
I'm very scared to see this type of early access game on console. PCs are very beta friendly. There's ways to go around working with them. Consoles have very strict things that they can and can't do. And you risk a lot more problems on a console than you do on a PC.
Yeah, you're right.
So I would love to see it, but I would love to see it actually get released and then be on console with maybe like beta stress testing and that type of stuff in the weeks prior to launch. But I don't think it needs an early access launch on console. I feel like that could really hurt the gaming community when console gamers are more casual gamers as a whole, I feel.
Well, what if they kind of did it the way that they released Minecraft on consoles, where the PC version of Minecraft now is still very much like a very raw, malleable thing. You can do a lot of things to it as far as like mods, you know, graphical mods and like gameplay tweaks and stuff like that. It's still like, I don't want to say unstable. It's not unstable, but like I said, it's a lot more malleable. But if you play it on consoles, it's a lot more stringent and structured in the way the game plays. Now, you can add mods and stuff like that, but they usually have to be like, you know, they have to be approved mods that go through a process and so on and so forth. And most of them are just skin packs anyway. But you can have more control as the console,
yeah,
you know, at like in the console space. So, like, what if they did it like that? Would that allow it to still be released on consoles, but still be in a controlled environment?
What they're going to have to do is they're going to get to a point where the game is good. Very, very good. Right now, I think the game itself is good, but the gameplay is rough.
Yeah.
Like, it's really laggy. There's lag problems everywhere. There's a lot of like bump mapping is all messed up. And a lot of the like interactions with things are messed up. Jumping and climbing and all that kind of stuff is really messed up. If they get to a point where that all that stuff is pretty well fixed, what they'll do is they'll move it to console, right? And they'll release it. That'll be a full release game. And then they won't patch that game for a long time. They might keep patching the PC version because they know people will put up with it.
and they can put out patches, and some of them might break it, and then move it back and break it, move it back, and stuff like that. But those patches will not be put into the console realm until they get a patch that's perfect. And they do that same thing with Warframe. They do that with Terraria. They do that with a bunch of different stuff where the console version.
Go ahead.
I can type being Tony.
Sorry.
But they do that with the console versions of a lot of those games where they keep it at a stable patch, and then they continue patching the PC version a bunch of times until they get another one that's really good that has a lot of great content, and then moves it across. And that's how they kind of put up with that thing that you were mentioning, Kurt, where like PC can deal with a game that's broken for like a day or two, and that's no problem, but console people cannot. They will see that it's a broken game and never play it again.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, all right. I think we have definitely beaten the dead horse when it comes to early access and pre-purchases and stuff like that. We're not telling you what to do with your money, folks. We're not telling you what to play. We're just telling you that you need to be wary and you need to be smart consumers, because they're going to try and sell you whatever they can to get your money. You need to be smart with the way you purchase. That's the main message to take away from here.
I will throw out that there's a reason news companies like IGN, Metacritic, they get copies of the games weeks in advance, so they have time to play them a little bit and write these reviews. Trust those companies that do these reviews. If you know you're a hardcore gamer, find a hardcore gaming website and trust their reviews. If you're a more casual gamer, find people who do casual gameplay reviews and see, based on those reviews, whether you think you'll like it or not. Use that information to decide if you want to pre-order or pre-purchase. That's probably the best advice I could give you, but ultimately this is on the consumers.
Yep, that is 100%. All right, so I think in closing we should, we'll finish up with an announcement. So I have to bring things on to kind of a pause with Binary Gamer, and the main reason why is because my day job is demanding a lot from me. It's gotten to the point now to where I can't really split my focus. I have to pick one or the other, and obviously I need to side with the thing that supports my family and obviously, you know, brings in money and possibly is going to bring me to retirement one day. Now, this is not going to be a permanent hold, but the podcast and a lot of the goings on like YouTube and things like that are going to slow down dramatically. The podcast is going away for a while, and as far as things on YouTube and Twitch and stuff like that, I won't be streaming or making content as much. The others, Chris, Kurt, KGB, all those guys, they'll stream whenever they can, but as far as myself, I have to focus on my job, the thing that actually brings me a paycheck. But it doesn't mean that we're gone forever. Like I said, Binary Gamer will return, but when that is exactly, I cannot tell you. The one thing I can tell you, though, is to be on the lookout on like Facebook and Twitter. Follow me over on Twitter at iFlipOfTheSwitch, and I tweet quite a bit, and I am planning on letting people know when things are going to be coming back on those different platforms. So definitely keep a lookout there. But yeah, just for now, I don't want to give people a substandard product. I don't want to give people a half-assed show. I'm very much in the Ron Swanson mode of thinking where you should never half-ass something. You should whole-ass it. And I want to make sure I give you guys a whole-ass product. So in closing, does anybody have anything to say before we leave the nice extended period of time?
It's been fun with Binary Gamer. I think at the very least, I'll continue doing something. We'll find out in this evaluation period if it's still with Binary Gamer or what's going on with that.
All right. Chris, any closing words?
Not really. I'll be around doing stuff, doing things. That's what I do.
Yep. It's all right. So that is going to do it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great day. Class dismissed.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.
I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's premier home purchase lender. We've created a new way to protect you from unpredictable interest rates. Our exclusive Rate Shield approval. First, we lock your interest rate for up to 90 days. Then, if rates go up, your rate stays locked. But if rates go down, your rate drops. Either way, you win. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply.